Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, hi-dilly-ho, neighborinos, and welcome to the Blizzard Watch podcast, where I have apparently become Ned Flanders, destroyer of worlds.
I hate it. I'm gone. Bye.
Yeah. But whilst we're, you know, dealing with that, let's say hi to our amazing co-hosts, Liz Harper and Joe Perez. How are you guys? How are you doing?
No, howdy-ho. I'm gone. I left. Remember, I told you I was leaving.
You're still talking to me now, so you can might as well answer my question.
I'm fine. Thank you for asking.
But I'm going to say right now, you guys raid on Tuesdays, right? Or you raid on Wednesdays?
Mondays and Wednesdays.
Yes. You got it.
So you'll have a day to get used to 10.1.5 before you.
Yeah, I think we do the smart thing where we never try to raid on patch day.
That is a smart thing. I will give you full credit on that one, because every other guild I've ever been in raids on Tuesdays, and man.
It's like, no, this is just going to be, if I went to a raid tonight, I would still be sitting here with like 3 class guides up trying to remember what my hotkeys are, because every skill has changed now. I mean, this is for Holy Paladins. This is like Cataclysm 2.0. Maybe not quite as bad as Cataclysm, but it's like black is white, light is dark. Yes.
And then when you log in, the first thing that happens is everyone's like, let's go do the new mega dungeon. And you're like, oh, God.
To be fair, I want to do the mega dungeon. I really want to do the mega dungeon.
I do, but I also, it's like, okay, where do I find room on my keyboard to put 5 new cooldown hotkeys? I don't know. I can't do this yet. So at least I have until tomorrow to figure this out.
So, yeah, I think that serves as a pretty good way to just jump right into various things going on. If you are listening to this show live, you know full well that 10.1.5 went live today. If you are listening to us recording, usually goes up by Friday, I believe.
Yeah, the recording's on Friday.
You will be listening back on our recollections of the chaos of this Tuesday that happened 3 days ago to you. So, you know, time is flexible and all that. But there is a lot to talk about in terms of 10.1.5. I mean, I've actually been convinced to log on to see some of it even.
Wow.
I it's hard to get me away from Diablo 4, but they managed. Although next week they'll probably be managing to send me the other way. I feel like a ping pong ball. Blizzard is just playing with
really?
It.
Really? Yeah.
But
maximum engagement.
Yeah. Honestly, I feel a little overly engaged, quite frankly. My doctor trip today was a nice break, because I wasn't just staring at Diablo 4 all day going, if I run a level 40.
But you were thinking about it while you were there, and we know you were.
Oh, yeah. Of course. I dream in it now. It's like Tetris, except, you know, with a lot more demon than Tetris. At least I think so. Getting back to this, we've got the new Evoker spec, which is the augmentation Evoker. That's the one that's kind of
I'm legitimately excited about that.
Yeah. We've got time rift events, which is kind of like go back in time and fight guys we've already fought, but with less people and you know, it's weird. I'm not sure what the time rifts are all about. I didn't get a chance to do it. We've got the Kalimdor Dragon Racing. We've got letting crazy adventurers take care of babies, which I don't think is a great idea.
I love how when you go there, like the first thing that the NPC says is, or one of the NPCs says, don't you want to check my certifications? And the one's like, nope, you volunteered. I trust that's good enough. Get to work.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm the guy that once took an orphan to multiple battlegrounds. And yet, well, here we go.
They literally asked for it.
There was an achievement to be had for that. So, obviously, you know what motivates adventurers? It's loot and achievements. It's filling up those little green bars. Yep. So, you offer us one of these things, and it's like, okay, I need to drag my orphan through a war zone. No big deal.
No, and that's, you know, with that can-do spirit, we will be raising the next generation of dragons. Maybe it'll work. I don't know. Dragons are kind of nuts. But in addition to all that, we've got the Dawn of the Infinite's Mega Dungeon, which is kind of all about Nosdormu's, literally Nosdormu's midlife crisis, in that, you know, he should be turning into an evil jerk now, and possibly driving a sports car. I don't know about that part, but definitely turning into an evil jerk. So yeah, I'm not going to spoil anything. That's the lunch trailer for this patch has that information in it. But I will say that it's interesting that we are now at the middle part of this expansion.
Yep.
And with this patch, we've now got new information. Like, for instance, this is a mild spoiler, but I feel like they've put it in enough videos. Alex Straz has been keeping secrets about her relationship with some of these dragons, the elemental avatar dragons, because she's clearly knows one of them pretty well. They had a conversation, and that's interesting. We know that Eridacron's up to something because he's involved heavily in all the events going on here. Fyrax off burning people. It's definitely shaping up that the dragon avatars, or whatever you want to call them, dragon, what are they called?
Aspects.
No. The elemental ones.
Oh.
I can never remember if they're called elemental avatars or.
No.
Primal incarnates.
Thank you. The primal incarnates are maybe not gonna be what we thought they were, and that's interesting to me. We're seeing signs of, I don't want to say humanity because, you know, there's no humanity here, but signs of like things other than revenge and hate going on in at least some of them. So that's cool. I'm gonna say straight up, what of all the stuff coming in this patch, Liz first. What are you most interested in getting into? The paladin changes or something else?
I mean, personally, it's got to be the paladin changes because it's a huge rework to Holy Paladins, and I'm playing a Holy Paladin, and I'm obsessing over this to the exclusion of other content because it's like I have to figure out how this works and how I can make this work for me before I can even properly engage in some of this other content. Like Joe was just talking about running the Dawn of the Infinite new Mega Dungeon. And I'm like, okay, that would be cool. I'd like to see what goes on. But also, I no longer know how to play this spec. It is totally different. I've read a lot. I've been following the patch notes, but getting that in practice and working out a totally new rotation, I mean, that takes a little time. And it's hard to think about all of these other things going on. When it's like, well, actually, I don't even know how to play my class anymore because it's a little bit, a tiny, tiny bit upside down.
Yeah, and it's not the kind of thing you can pick up in a day, no matter what anyone says.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, if I had to go raiding right now, I could. I can throw together a spec, and it would probably be too much like my previous spec to be good, but I could. I could throw something together and go out there, but I really need to sit there. I need to run some LFR. I need to practice with some training dummies until I kind of figure out the rotation again, because it's really off kilter from what it was before.
Okay. Joe?
I have been chanting Mega Dungeon for like an hour.
only an hour?
There's a lot of stuff in 10.1.5 that I think is worth looking into. But the two things that excite me the most are the Mega Dungeon, because I love Mega Dungeons. Also because it's one of those things where there's a lot of story in it, and the story being released in Mega Dungeons always excites me because it is accessible and not like hiding content behind a raid, but also challenging enough that, like, for me, I don't feel like I'm, you know, I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. I'm getting
you don't feel like you walk in and get like, yeah, an exposition dump.
Yeah. So like, I feel like I'm working a little bit for towards it, and that's what I like. Like I liked the marketplace in Shadowlands. I liked Mechagon. I liked those style of dungeons. The other thing that I really, really am excited for is the Evoker specialization. Augmentation is something that I think I've been asking for a while. I rolled my dragon, and I didn't really like either of the way that the other specs or the two current specs played, so I just let them sit. Hadn't touched it since. Now I'm like, you know, I'm going to level up. I'm going to play around with this, and maybe this will be my this. I will finally have my dragon alt because I do like the way that the spec is laid out. I like the way that it played on the PTR. Like, I just think it's neat. So those are the things that I'm excited for the most.
For me, it's figuring out what the heck is going on with time rests, because I have very little information on them and don't know how they work and don't know what they do. So that's one of the reasons I logged on today, is I want to start messing around with those.
So they start every other stuff. I mean, I can run you through some of them.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, when I'm around. But I mean, I will also say that the holy paladin changes have me interested in playing my paladin again. Because I had kind of given up on that. And it's not that the Holy Paladin changes are so great that I'm like, it's more like, ooh, everybody doesn't know what they're doing. So if I don't know what I'm doing, I'm just one of the crowd. Nobody will specifically notice that I don't know what I'm doing.
Getting in a good time.
Honestly, though, it is something that I think about a lot with this kind of content. 0.5 patches are usually pretty good for coming back. Because there's enough new stuff that people are all kind of on the same boat, but there's enough stuff that's established that you can get in on the in the groove of it. Mm-hmm. And that's something I've been thinking about. But on the other hand, Diablo 4 exists. And my God, I've currently got one character like into the 80s, and I haven't gotten to play her in like 2 days. So at this point, my hands are like twitchy. And my other character is like almost 50, would be 50, except that I'm deliberately trying not to level this character too fast because my wife and I play together. And this is mm-hmm. the character that is strictly from when I play with my wife. And then there's two others that are getting there. And I haven't gotten to play a necromancer yet, which is like, oh no, I have to play a necromancer. So yeah, there's a lot of stuff in Diablo 4. And then, you know, other stuff is happening, which we'll talk about later. Also, I got to say, the baby dragon babysitting thing is one of my favorite ideas. Like, just as the same time that I think it could be an absolutely horrible mistake, because, you know, in our hands, all things become chaos. I do still love that they put something like that in. I love when they put in little things and that they have a fair amount of development in depth to them, but it's just baby dragons. It doesn't have to all be, you know, the fate of the cosmos is at stake. It's just baby dragons. Go hang out with them. Because I'm telling you, if there were actual baby dragons to be hanging out with, I would probably do that. I mean, yes, I can't. Yeah, I can see lots of downsides, but I'd still go do it. Because, you know, I've had cats for years, so yeah, I know all about pets with downsides. But I love those little maniacs.
It's funny how all of this is going on, but also we can. It's like, okay, we need a dragon babysitter. Can you help? I know, you know, there are the primal incarnates and there's this weird time thing going on, but we really need a babysitter tonight. Could you please come over?
If you've ever known anybody who worked, like if you've ever known anybody who worked in like daycare or at a vet's office or anything like that, you've all heard that voice of utter, just please, I need somebody for just 10, I need to just drink some coffee and sleep for like a little while, please. You know what we're talking about. Or a new parent. Or people who just got a new cat or dog. Like the first week you get a dog, especially if it's a puppy, a brand new puppy.
Gosh.
Oh my God. That animal, it's like, it's an explosion of sunshine, which you think that'd be great. But it's like, think about like the moment in a fireworks show where like the big finale happens. Now imagine it was just all sleeping and the big finale over and over again. Like, okay, it's asleep. We got a few minutes. Boom! Da, 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 da. Oh, God, not again.
It's an explosion of sunshine in your life, but it's still an explosion.
Yes, it's like a strobe effect. It's not, yeah. Oh, God, help us. So, yeah, I definitely like that they're putting that in there. I do like that. There's a lot of events, and unfortunately, because Liz and I weren't synced up on time, I couldn't get into the main email, so I have to scroll down here. Going to talk about the Twitch drops, the picnic basket toy. That's available through Twitch to the 18th of July, so a week or so. Next week it will be over, right? Because this is the 11th and 7 days. Yeah, so the 18th.
Yes. So next Tuesday, you just have to watch 4 hours of World of Warcraft content on Twitch, and you will get an adorable picnic basket toy.
Meanwhile, Amazon's also getting in on this to the 27th with the Swift Shore Strider. Yeah, Swift Shore Strider. My brain always wants it to be the Swift Shovel Strider, and I don't know why.
My brain always wants to go Swift Shoe Strider. Yeah, so.
It's like your brain's just cutting a letter out. My brain's sticking more letters in. I don't know. Maybe that says something about what we are, who we are.
And I'm just thinking that chocobo looks weird.
Well, yeah, but you think that about everything. I remember that time you went to the zoo, and like, you know, every time a bird was around, you were like, "Huh, that chocobo looks weird." That's a camel. That's a dromedary camel. That's
to not be even fair, a bird, Joe. To be in my defense, that is a weird chocobo.
Yeah, well, true enough, I suppose. But yeah, that's going till the 27th. We already mentioned the patch, of course. We were literally just talking about that. So that, I guess that's pretty much all the World of Warcraft stuff to talk about right now. I mean, there's going to be more, obviously, but right now that covers it. There's a ton in 10.1.5 that we have barely even scratched the surface on, but to a certain degree, it's all fairly new, so it's not like we can sit here and tell you all about running the dungeon yet when none of us have gotten to. But yeah, I will at this point mention something that I think is pretty important, actually, in that in 2 days, Diablo Immortal is going to go have the Blood Knight class go live. On the 13th of July, the Diablo Immortal is putting the first new class in a Diablo game since the Crusader in Diablo.
Years.
Yeah, in Diablo 3. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Witch Doctor, don't forget.
The Witch Doctor came during that game, though.
Oh yeah,
the Crusader actually came out after.
But it's still a new class, I guess. Whatever. Well,
for that matter, the monk was new. I mean, if we're gonna say well, let's put it this way. The first new class in a Diablo game since Diablo 3.
Fair.
Because, yeah, all those classes we mentioned were new. Diablo 4 doesn't currently have any new classes, which I think is fascinating.
Yet.
Yet. Well, I mean, obviously, two expansions. Who knows? But I still think that's really interesting to think that the first time we get a new class in a Diablo game in 2023, it's in Diablo Immortal.
So the Crusader came with Reaper of Souls in 2014. Mm-hmm. That was our last new Diablo class.
Yeah, and then we get the Necromancer, but that wasn't a new class because we'd already had the Necromancer once. So yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm consciously optimistic about it because the thing about Diablo Immortal is the thing I don't like about Diablo Immortal is plain and simple the itemization. It's not playing the game. It's the monetization of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is just played up the monetization. I might go reinstall it and see if it's eased up a little. If it is not, then I'm not going to keep putting myself through that.
I know it has eased up a little, but I don't think it's eased up enough that it actually is going to feel smooth.
Yeah,
the problem with Diablo Immortal is that it's a really great Diablo game. It is such a good game, and it plays so smoothly. I used to play Immortal on my phone, on my iPhone, but casting it to my 55-inch television, and it played great. It looked great. I mean, this is an amazing Diablo game that feels like Diablo, but runs on your phone or your tablet, and it's great. It's a great game. But then every time you log on, it nags you to go, hey, come to the store and get this thing. Oh, hey, you have to claim this free thing in the store. Hey, don't you want to buy some orb things?
And they got their farms all in my Diablo.
Yeah.
It's so naggy. And, you know, you can play through the story. The story's fun. The gameplay's fun. But you hit a wall eventually where progression really slows down unless you start handing over cash. And that's so annoying because it is a great game. It's a really solid video game under all those layers of monetization.
Yeah, and the worst part is that Diablo 4 has shown us that they know how to do a system where you can completely freaking ignore it. I haven't even looked at it since I started playing it. And I know full well that when I play the season, I will use the Battle Pass exactly as much as I have to and no more. And I don't have to do anything involving money.
Yeah, I don't feel compelled to with Diablo 4 either. I feel like there's plenty there.
They haven't even mentioned the store. All I know about the store is that occasionally I notice that there's an exclamation point next to the store. And that's it. And I mean, I get why that's not necessarily the approach you want to take for a mobile game. Because mobile games tend to be a lot more. Hey, I couldn't help but notice that you're trying to play a video game without spending money. Can I help?
Listen, I'll take Clippy over the monetization of those games any day of the week.
Well, if Clippy starts doing them, then you would definitely be like even more upset by them. Or Tingle, it's Tingle from the Zelda and Zelda.
No, you mean Navi.
No, I mean Tingle. Navi is annoying. Hey, but Tingle is disturbing. That guy. What is the deal with Tingle? We can't get into that now. We have so much else to talk about. But yeah, that's happening on the Diablo front. Go ahead.
Did we actually talk about the new class, the Blood Knight?
Not even a little. That's why I'm actually glad you're here, because I wanted to bounce this off both of you. What do you think about the concept behind this class? How would you explain it to people if you were trying to explain the Blood Knight to a new player? I'm going to go with Liz first because she
I mean, it's... yes, I jumped into this one. I mean, you're like a half vampire. You've got... And I mean, that's a trope we've seen before. And even... You even see necromancers and necromancer abilities play into this sort of thing. It's you have these powers against blood. You can use this to fuel you up, the fact that you're like a vampire hybrid. And but there's a balance. You don't want to fall all the way over into vampirism. I mean, it sounds like an interesting class. My only concern would be that kind of its blood-based abilities lean too far towards the necromancer skill set. But I don't know. It's... also, you know, I watched the trailer for them, and all I could think was, like, Venthyr and Sire Denathrius, because that is their complete aesthetic. That's the whole thing. If you're familiar with that, you will be familiar with the Blood Knight.
Well, I honestly was thinking of Castlevania Symphony of the Night, but, you know, that's because the Venthyr basically just reached over to the, you know, to various Castlevania games.
Oh, yoink! Yeah. The entire land is basically, what if Castlevania, but MMO?
Yeah, it is very much that. But one of the things I thought was interesting was that these guys, the Blood Knights, they feel like a kind of hybrid caster melee thing, which we haven't really had a lot of in Diablo, unless you think of all casters as being melee, because you can pretty much just do all your caster stuff while things are right up there. Mm-hmm. And certainly I would say that a druid... in D4.
Druid is definitely a hybrid, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I kind of felt like the Blood Knight was kind of like, what if a barbarian, but a vampire? And not in the case of, they don't really feel like a barbarian, but they have that kind of up-close melee thing.
Now, hear me out. The groundwork's already there in Diablo 4 for Blood Knights. It's already there. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's only a matter of there's only a matter of time.
I mean, vampires be everywhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The blood
vampire knights are already in the game. They're just mm-hmm. ones we blow up.
Yeah, and for that matter, I mean, some of them could be like, "No, this is wrong. What we're doing, we must fight against this corruption." You know, that's all built into the whole cathedral thing, anyway. So who knows? But yeah, it is interesting. It's an interesting class with an interesting playbook. I don't know how much I will personally like it, but I definitely think there's room for it. Quite frankly. The fact that Immortal was also using nothing but classes from a previous Diablo game was a little weird. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, Diablo 4 did the same thing. It came out with a bunch of familiar mm-hmm. old favorites.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the things I'm thinking about a lot. So I am interested to see how this works, to see like this new class get. I want to see it get a fair shake. I'm also curious if they use it to make a thematic connection between what's going on in Diablo 2 and Diablo Immortal and to some degree Diablo 3 and then say, oh, this is how it got carried forward 50 years later in Diablo 4. Because there's a lot of stuff in Diablo 4 that references previous Diablo games. But since we were never in some of these places, like the Fractured Peaks are almost entirely new to us. Same with the Dry Steps. And the part of Khajistan we go to, that's the only real part we've actually seen before. And then only the stuff around Chaldeum.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting to me, like in terms of getting a sense of like how these games interrelate. I think that we're definitely going to see that as the various seasons come out, which I guess we can talk about in a little bit. I mean, you guys have anything else you want to say about the Blood Knight before we move on?
Well, maybe I'll go from the Blood Knight to a little tangent here. We're talking about the Blood Knight in the context of Diablo 4. What do y'all think the next Diablo 4 class is going to be? Will the Blood Knight be making the jump to Diablo 4? Because I think we're all waiting to find out what the next class in D4 could be.
She said me, so I'll go.
Yep, go ahead.
I've been thinking about this a lot because one of the things that I felt was like a really noticeable lack in this game was a light-based character like the Paladin or the Crusader. Mm-hmm. We've seen both Paladins and Crusaders and a third group called the Penitent Knights all using the light, all doing it differently. Crusaders seem completely floundering and lost in this game.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there's story for that and for both of them. Yeah.
Paladins are practically like there are mentions of them, but there's practically no living choosing the light paladins that we see.
Because
if they exist, they're not here.
Because the last real like bastion of the Paladin Order was there's a whole story for that too, and what happened with that? Because
absolutely
again, yeah. Mephisto. Thanks, Mephisto.
Well, I mean, you know, he would be only too grateful to accept your thanks on that one. You're like, yes, I did you a service. But regardless. We've got those guys. We've got the Penitents. We don't see anything about the Templar Order or Cormac. And I think that's sad. And I would love to see more about it. I honestly find myself wondering still if that Templar kind of class could show up. If there could be some form of Paladin-like character. But maybe not a Paladin. And maybe not like anything we've seen before.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with it, too. But I'll shut up and let you finish.
I think I was pretty much done if you want to go. I can say more, but...
I think the groundwork is there for not a Paladin and not a Crusader, but a hybrid in between. Because there's a lot of quests that deal with finding out what happened to the Paladin Orders and the Crusader Orders. And the Crusaders have always been a master and apprentice. The master dies, the apprentice takes over the mastership, same way as like the hunter, the demon hunters, and things like that go. But I think that you're going to see something different. I think there's going to be a shield-based class, a light-based class, a shield-based class that isn't going to be either of those, but pays homage to it. And Matt brought up the Templar thing. That's kind of where I was thinking, like, it would be a really good opportunity to bring the Templar in, having sort of like powers similar to the Paladin and wielding the light and sort of like the same sort of like moral obligation of the Crusaders and sort of like melding them into their own thing and giving us a new class that fills that role. Because we don't really have a shield class right now.
Yeah, just necromancers and
necromancer. Like hello.
Yeah, but that's you're a caster damage dealer. I don't traditionally view you as more of I'm in your face, hurry up and attack me type class.
Yeah, necros are interesting though. But to get back to it, I think one of the things about like the Templars is they have an interesting history of being people that were essentially brainwashed. They had their memory stolen. They had no idea who they were.
Yeah.
They were tortured until they had no memory. And then they were they came into the Templar Order. And now that they could draw upon the light and use their powers, but they had no knowledge of themselves. And at the end of Diablo 3 in Reaper of Souls, we kill the Grand Maester. Mm-hmm. We basically defeat that regime. And in its place, the only Templar of any real note is Cormac, who helped stop Diablo and is thus a hero. And so what happened after, you know, we managed to stop Malthiel, but practically everybody was dead. What did Cormac do? We know what one of the companions did. One of the companions is in the game. I'm not saying who in case you haven't played it.
Yep.
But the other two, we don't know what they did. And I think that would be a really good way to get an idea of what's been going on. Like, because sure, the cathedral happened, but what about other people who still worship the light, but didn't necessarily buy in Arius? So yeah, there's a lot of possibilities there.
And I think there's two other real strong possibilities that the game hints at as well. One, I do think Blood Knight will eventually come to Diablo because, again, there's just too much in just the main storyline that if you just play through the main storyline, it's there. The Chalice of Blood, the whole nine.
Yeah, what is the deal with that? Why was that Chalice of Blood in a supposed holy site?
Yeah, and I think the part of the reason is probably going to be Blood Knight.
The vampires are all over the holy sites. Do we see vampires anywhere else but like holy sites?
Only the holy sites.
Because they're over the place.
Holy sites or weird abandoned cities underground.
Which were what once bastions of humanity or holy sites themselves. Like you're going to like fallen barracks or fallen towns, fallen keeps and things like that and you see them there. The third class that is very, very likely, and I would definitely stake, like I'd hang my hat on this one, I think we're going to get witches at some point. And I would be very happy with that, because I think they have one of the more interesting interesting existences in Diablo, and probably would be a far less problematic inclusion than the Witch Doctor was.
They feel less like a, like the Witch Doctor, for a lot of its stuff felt like it was a bad taste joke.
Now, the question that I have, and this is before moving off of this, we're getting two expansions. If they follow the Diablo 2 expansion route, which I'm not saying they would, or why would they, but this game has a lot of like Diablo 2 feel to me, like in the I'm compelled to play type thing. They introduced two classes when they did an expansion. So what if our first expansion gave us two classes, maybe the Blood Knight and maybe the Templar, or maybe the Blood Knight and maybe the Witch. And then the second one gave us another two. So we have three very likely candidates. Is there a fourth type of class or class archetype that could be added as well?
Liz?
Well, the thing is, a lot of the classes that I would bring up that I've enjoyed in previous Diablo games have kind of been rolled into other classes. Like, I remember the Assassin in Diablo 2, which I thought was really fun. You were really focused on setting traps of different types, but that's been rolled into the Rogue. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Rogue doesn't have the versatility with traps, but it has that tool set. Obviously, I think about the Amazon. There are no real story ties for an Amazon at this point in the game.
Oh, no, that's not true. That's not true.
The whole sightless eye. The sightless eye is a huge one.
Okay. Yeah. But, okay.
That's a big one, because that's a big part of their backstory.
Yeah, it's from, that's the Isle of
Phobos. I don't know how he got it.
Yeah.
How did he get it?
Well, we did. I thought the sightless eye was tied to the original Diablo rogues, not the Amazons.
Am I mixing those up? It was stolen from the Amazons
by
the original rogues, who were themselves Amazons, who defected because they didn't agree with the other Amazons about how to use the sightless eye.
Yeah, the original rogues were a secondary. They were an offshoot of the Amazons.
Interesting. Yeah. Interesting. So, I mean, maybe Amazon. The
Sisterhood of the Sightless Eye, specifically, right?
Right. Hmm. I would like to see some Amazons here, because Amazon was always my favorite
Diablo 2 class. I've wanted them to go to Scoblis forever.
And, I mean, it did have kind of a unique toolset. It was a character class who could attack from melee or ranged, and it was just a skilled being from either one of them, and you could swap between them really easily. Of course, that sort of hybridization seems really common in Diablo 4. It's very easy to sort of switch between being in melee and being at range for most classes.
I got the achievement for when you're like you do a lot of kills at range, and I'm like, what? I'm playing a barbarian. How did that happen? And I'm like, oh yeah, a lot of my abilities hit things like 30 feet away, like upheaval or the chain thing. So yeah, okay, yeah, it makes sense. So you're right, definitely. I'm agreeing with you on that. So, plus, it feels like they deliberately took a lot of the Amazon's versatility and folded it into the Rogue. The Rogue feels like, hey, did you like this class? Well, here it is. Did you like the original Rogue? Here it is.
Go ahead.
The Rogue also feels a lot like a Diablo 3 Demon Hunter.
Yes.
To the point where it uses a lot of the same skills, a lot of the same skill names. And to the point where I'm just like, why didn't you just call it a Demon Hunter, except to change the story around a little, because it feels a lot like a Demon Hunter. It's such a mishmash of previous Diablo classes all squished together.
Yeah, it's like, it's got the name Rogue, and that of course brings in the idea of the Rogue from the original Diablo. But it definitely, you mentioned the Assassin and both the Assassin and the Amazon from D2, and it's got Demon Hunter from D3. So yeah, it's definitely like, here's everything that might even remotely resemble that.
You know, the interesting thing though is this could be a very interesting opportunity for them to reimagine what an Amazon is in Diablo terms. We haven't seen them since Diablo 2. So close to 70 years, they've been isolated. They haven't had they've had that schism. And if rogues were the offshoot, the Sisterhood of the Sightless Eye or offshoot that became what they are now, and your lineage as a rogue harkens back to that, which is why you have the melee and the range thing. Reimagine what an Amazon is and introduce it. Maybe it's more Wonder Woman-esque. Maybe it's more Battlemaster. Maybe it's more, maybe it's augmentation evoker, right? Like you could, but I mean, you could really play around with the idea of what has happened in 70 years to Amazonian society, and maybe what they hold, like how that has shifted as far as a playable class. I personally would love to see an Amazon again. I want to go to Scovos. Like, if we don't go to Skovos, I'm going to be very upset.
Yeah, I definitely want us to go to Skovos. I want us to go to Zansal because I know a lot of people want Zansal, and you'll get really upset with me if I make you think you're not going to get it. But for me, Skovos is my number one. We haven't seen it ever.
Yeah, because I mean, we've never seen it. We know that it is. We know that the Iskari homeland is there, right? We know that the original, what is it, with Filios, right, was the first generation Nephilim that founded that.
Filios was the angel.
Filios was the angel. That's right.
Iskari was the Nephilim, and
I thought it was Lycander. I thought Lycander was the. The angel.
Maybe it was. I thought it was Iskari, but Iskari might have been the one who took in charge after. I don't have the notes in front. But remember that Filios and the Nephilim were in love.
Oh, like, no, Filios is the Nephilim. Yeah, I looked it up. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So they were in love, and it was to contact that angel after they left that the Sightless Eye was originally used for. It was originally basically a radio into heaven, which is why I think it will be used in one of the expansions, because we don't know what's going on with heaven or Tyriel or any of it.
And you know what? I just had a weird thought. We have Cassia in Heroes of the Storm. They have a new template. They have a template for a brand new Amazon right there. Sorry. Totally.
Well, for that matter, I don't think her template in Heroes of the Storm is that much different than the D2 one. I mean, it's different.
It's all about phalanx fighting.
Fair enough. I honestly feel like there should be a Amazon style that is very much like the spear woman idea, like the javelin throwing idea that they had. And there should definitely be a way to go as an Amazon that just makes you like an outright tank. Heck, that could be the light using class that we talked about. It could be an Amazon. Amazon's, because the Amazons have that whole relationship where their founder was in love with an angel, and that's what they were using the Sightless Eye for,
and
was to contact that angel and get advice.
And I'll read this off because I just found it and I tossed it in chat because I think it's interesting. Cassia was changed by her ordeal, having seen hatred, terror, and destruction firsthand. She decided that if the Iskari were to survive the coming darkness, they needed an army. Thus, she returned to Skovos to begin training her fellow Amazons immediately. She ascended through the ranks of the Amazon caste to become their most legendary commander. She received the rank of War Matron and received the War Matron's armor from Queen Zera herself. So, like, yeah, there you go. There's your in. Completely new Amazon. Let's go. I'm here. I'm here for it. Let's do this.
Especially since that was decades ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've had lots of time for them to develop new ways in isolation.
And her, maybe she's able to call the lightning and the light. Maybe her attacks their attacks are light based. Oh man, I want this. I want this very badly.
Yeah. So yeah, there's a lot of room there. Did you actually? Are you done, Liz?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I mean, y'all hit most of the things that I was going to go into.
Okay, we should move on to some stuff that's like, you know, Overwatch Genesis has got its second episode. I think in 2 days on the 13th, and the last episode will be next week on the 20th. So it's like every Thursday, I guess.
Every Thursday. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is also, that's around the same time that the Overwatch Summer Games started today. So we should mention both of those things. So if you're an Overwatch player, that stuff's happening. Have they already sold BlizzCon tickets, or is the 7/22 date the first time?
They first sold batch BlizzCon one, tickets. Right? Yes. This on past the 8th. Weekend. Yes.
Yeah.
And they sold out. They took a little longer to sell out than I expected. You know,
are more expensive than usual.
Yeah. I mean, I sat down through the ticket queue just to see how the ticket queue worked, and it's like I got through without any trouble. So
that might be another issue. I mean, actually, maybe people are afraid of being able to actually get in and get them. Oh, this isn't how this works. I should be getting kicked out repeatedly. What do you mean it works? Existential crisis.
It's terrifying when you just go down to sit to buy a BlizzCon ticket and you just get a BlizzCon ticket. Is that how that's supposed to go? The ticketing process seemed pretty smooth. And hopefully, if you were hoping to go to BlizzCon, you got a BlizzCon ticket.
Hopefully. If not, you've got another opportunity on the 22nd, which will be another Saturday. So I'm pretty sure the 20th is a Thursday. So
yeah.
22nd will be a Saturday, 10 a.m. Pacific. So yeah, that's out there if you want to go to BlizzCon. got some Diablo 4 stuff to talk about, because I don't know if you guys noticed. Yeah, I don't know if people noticed, but last week we found out a little tiny thing, which was that Season 1 is going to be launching on the 20th, which is next week. I believe, in fact, we're 8 days away, according to the little ticker on my Battle.net app. And yeah, that's interesting. Who wants to talk about the Season of the Malignant first? Want me to do it? I'll do it. Okay. So what we're getting is the Season of the Malignant. I was kind of thinking that somebody would jump in there, and no one did. So.
You wrote the post.
I know. The Season of the Malignant, well, I wrote one of them. There have been a lot of posts because a lot of stuff's happening. First up, the Season of the Malignant is coming on the 20th, as we said. It's going to be not, it is not a continuation of the story from the main campaign. It is after the main campaign's events. It does not continue that story. So Lorath doesn't show up and take you on a treasure hunt. Nayrel doesn't send you an email going, yeah, I'm in Zeon Sol, everything's great. Those characters don't appear. What happens is you get a letter from a former priest of the Cathedral of Light named Carmord. I cannot pronounce his name, even though I've read it a million times now. He sends you a letter saying, hey, there's these new monsters, and they're completely filled with horrible evil called malignants, because I guess I just like the word. And I need your help to rip their hearts out and use the power in those hearts to create jewelry that you will then wear.
It is sanctuary, so it kind of follows the theme that you would rip out monster hearts and then make jewelry out of them.
Yeah,
but
the first time I read about it, it honestly reminded me of, I don't know if you guys did this when you were in, like, you know, the lower grades, but like from kindergarten to second grade, we'd have craft time. Mm-hmm. And we'd end up a lot of times making stuff like little rings or little hats in craft time, you know, out of paper mache and so forth. So I just imagined a bunch of sanctuary kids sitting down and sticking monster demon hearts like in this like paper crown for their mom or something, you know. Now that I'm done having my fun here, the malignant hearts are basically used in a ritual to summon a even more powerful malignant demon that when you just feed it will give you a caged heart. And caged hearts can be socketed into various gems. I think it's rings and amulets have been what I've seen that have an...
Let me cut in with just one little thing. You know, the caged heart thing, they were talking all about caged hearts on the developer live stream. Uh-huh. And then they, if you read the blog post, they don't mention caged hearts at all. They only call them malignant hearts. So I'm just wondering...
I wish that they wouldn't do that.
I think it's just a malignant heart. I actually edited that out of that post because
that's really annoying. Because
yeah, it's like
I watched the video, man. Why do I watch the video if you're just going to change it on me, guys?
This is like just writer problems where it's like we watch them and then we like dutifully transcribe what they said and write blog posts, and then it's like, no, actually that's not what we call it at all. We're just here talking off the cuff.
Regardlessly, you kill the monster, you get the heart out of that monster, and now you can socket that thing into your gems, rings and amulets. And there are four kinds of sockets based on colors. There's like red one, blue one. I can never remember the third one. And then there's three sockets, but there's four gems. There's red ones, blue ones, the color that I can't remember. And then there's one that can go into anything, which is obviously
exactly
the best one.
Exactly like it was in Warcraft back in the day.
It's basically Burning Crusade gem crafting. Except, you know, we weren't just mashing demon hearts into our rings.
It's weird to think that it's like in World of Warcraft, we were actually a little more sensible than we are in Diablo 4.
Yeah, because usually World of Warcraft, we're like straight up, hey, this hat is made entirely out of the blood of an old god. I'm going to put it on my head. Right, I'm right near my thinking meats. I'm going to just put them right on there. I don't think I'll need them. It'll be fine. But yeah, so that's the basic gist of it. You go to these places called malignant tunnels, and every time I say it, I feel like I'm at a doctor's office getting bad news. But you go into the malignant tunnel, and you fight a whole bunch of monsters, and those monsters drop malignant hearts that you can directly socket. You don't have to do the thing where you summon an even more powerful one and kill that. You just can straight up farm for the things inside the malignant tunnels. Otherwise, it's basically like a dungeon, but I think they're just kind of randomy dungeons. It's not like go to a dungeon that's already established and fight for malignant hearts. It's just random tunnel full of monsters. However, at the end of any malignant tunnel you do is a new boss. I want to say Vashon the consumed. I hope I'm right.
I would have to look that up. I think it starts with a Z.
I don't think it's a Z. I think it's a V based on when I wrote the post. I know I kept saying, I kept thinking it was like the cake company. So I'm like, what, like the cake company? I guess they are consumed, but I don't get what we're doing here. But regardless, you fight him. He's a new boss. One presumes he will have new mechanics and be a new pain in the butt. And you kill him and he drops new loot. And of course, more stuff that you can put demon hearts into, if that's what you're doing, which it is, that's the season theme. And the basis of the whole idea behind the Malignant Hearts, which I don't think I mentioned clearly enough, is that they add really interesting new powers. It isn't just like gems in the game right now are like, you know, if you put this gem in a ring, it will give you some armor. If you put this gem in your sword, it will give you some life on kill. This isn't that. This is like literally legendary powers. Some perhaps even more powerful than legendary powers that you can just stick in your ring and you can have, I think you can have up to three of them. And you can get new and more powerful ones as you do higher level stuff.
You can only put these gems into jewelry. So that's two rings and an amulet.
Yeah. So you can have one of these things right there on your neck and then one on each hand, I guess, in case you really just want to let everybody know that you're into pulsating horrible demon guts on your fingers.
And you do, because the pulsating demon guts have really cool powers. And as we discussed, that's all adventurers care about.
Yeah, loot and or achievements. And there are achievements to be had. So yeah, there's that too. But yeah, that's the basic deal with the season theme. But in addition to that kind of stuff, we are also getting six new unique items. And I don't know if those items will be available outside of the season. They didn't say specifically. Not in anything I read and not on the stream. Mm-hmm. I know that you will not be getting you won't be doing anything with the hearts if you're on the Eternal Realm. That's a season only thing. And they've said that right now there's no plans for this to roll into Diablo 4. The way that some stuff did back in Diablo 3, like the Nightmares, Season of Nightmares, where you were going to the Nightmare Realm and fighting harder and harder things. That came in and became part of Diablo 3. There's no idea of this doing that unless it's really cool and everybody wants it, then they might. But they want to be free to like just throw in weird powers and go nuts with it. Mm-hmm. So that's what they're doing here. Trying to think like
this is really modeled after Diablo 3 seasons, where there's a new season, you'll roll a new character to play in the season, and you don't get any of the seasonal stuff unless you roll that new character to get into the season.
Yeah. And they tied that into the season journey, which is also kind of rolled into the battle pass.
The season journey is basically the same as it was in Diablo 3.
Note for note.
It's just that the battle pass is tied into the season's journey. So you progress through the season's journey and you're gaining experience, which will advance you through the battle pass.
Yeah. And there's only like, I have seen some controversy about it, so I think we'll mention it. The battle pass, one of the things you can do is you gain this currency called Smoldering Ashes, which you can then spend on basically season. I want to say, I keep wanting to say seasonal season, blessings. I think they're called season blessings.
Yes.
The season blessings are based around, like, you can get one that gives your character more XP, or one that gives them more money, gold, or one that gives them more obols, the currency for the vendor who sells you possibly good stuff and possibly bad stuff. I don't know why you would ever use anything but experience, but, you know, people can do what they want. However, I've seen people complain about this, and it is tied to the battle pass, but it is not tied to the premium battle pass. It is not a money thing. Everything from the premium battle pass, there are 27 free tiers and something like, I want to say 60 non-free tiers.
The ballpark. Yeah. It's maybe 57.
It's a big amount. Yeah. And the premium tiers are all cosmetic items. It's all stuff that looks cool. That's it. There's nothing that will benefit your character and power. And one of the things you can do with it is you can do some skipping on the free stuff, right? You can skip some free tiers. So people are like, oh no, you'll be able to get the experience things earlier. But Blizzard is like, yes, but you won't be able to use them because they're tied to a level. And that's the level that players who don't use skips will be for around the time they unlock them. So there's, if there is a power benefit, it's extremely small. And I think that is possibly the best way they could handle it, considering that it is going to be an issue. People are going to get mad about it. So I don't know that I kind of wish that you just couldn't buy a skip, period.
Yeah.
But I know that that's when it's going to be a real hard sell, because mm-hmm. that's a way to make money here, guys. It's the easiest way to make money. It's just let people skip things. People love to skip things. So yeah. I don't know. What do you guys think about it? Joe hasn't said anything for a while, so I'll throw it to Joe first.
I think they're doing the best they can with having it at all. I mean, I don't mind battle passes when they're mostly cosmetic stuff or things that are like just value adds. And I like that what they're doing here is, even though there is something that potentially adds, you know, some character altering effect, that everybody gets it at the same essentially time and everybody has access to it on the free tier. It's not something you pay for. It's not a pay to play. So like, I'm okay with it. Like I at least right now, if that changes, I reserve the right to change my opinion later. But I mean, I think until I see it when it goes live and get to play with it and see how it feels, at least on paper, doesn't feel awful right now.
Liz, anything?
I mean, I think Diablo 4, the team working here, has tried very, very hard to distinguish the game from Diablo Immortal, because we have already talked about the really frustrating monetization with Diablo Immortal. And it feels like from day one, from their very earliest developer updates, we have been seeing them saying, no pay for power. We have a battle pass, but we're not doing it like this. They've just stressed this constantly, nonstop, that the battle pass is only cosmetic. And I think they've hit a good balance here. I mean, it's as much as I would like to just not have a battle pass. Come on, guys. How many battle passes do I have to play through? I am so tired of having to play through a battle pass in every video game.
But maximum engagement.
Keep in mind, at least it's not Hearthstone, where you have at least four battle passes that you're not sure which one, like, am I using?
Yeah. 10 battle passes in a trench coat. Yes. And you can progress several of them at the same time by doing the same things. Okay. Yeah, Diablo 4. They've really taken pains to try not to make this a monetization nightmare, to try not to make this drive players away, like it has certainly driven us away from Diablo Immortal, even though I was just saying earlier,
yeah,
Immortal is a great game.
Yeah, I liked playing Immortal. I played Immortal for mm-hmm. quite some time. A lot of the stuff that Immortal did is stuff that I know Diablo 4 looked at and said, ah, we're going to do that too. Their mm-hmm. character customization is pretty close. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot to like about Diablo Immortal, but in the end I was driven away by the monetization. We don't have a lot of time left, and there's at least one big story that we haven't mentioned yet, so I want to get that one out there.
What? A big yeah. story? Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about, Matt.
What gets me is I begged for emails today and questions, and we're not going to do any of them.
This always happens when you beg for emails.
Yeah, I know. I feel like a jerk. Thank you in advance, Gavlin, for asking them all. I appreciate it. But unfortunately, the judge in the U.S. antitrust suit against Microsoft on the Activision Blizzard purchase has ruled that they can proceed, that they are satisfied that the steps Microsoft is taking means that they are not trying to become a monopoly, that this is not going to be an exclusive situation. Your opinion on that, go ahead, but that's the case. The case has been decided, and Microsoft can proceed with their purchase of Activision Blizzard, which is, I believe, right now considered to be a $69 billion deal. Mm-hmm. So, is currently back on.
And one thing I would say is, politics aside, like, I know I've heard some people like complaining and saying that this was like, oh, it's being obstructed, and the judge is, you know, very clearly appointed by, you know, X, Y, Z. This is a recent appointed judge. Scott Corley was the judge that resided over it, was nominated in January of 2022 and confirmed in March of 2022. So he's been in that position for only a couple of years and was put forth by the current administration.
Yeah, I don't necessarily, whatever your beliefs on corporations in the United States or in the world at large, I think I'm pretty much on record of saying that they're all evil.
They're
like, you know, mm-hmm. they're evil. It's just a bunch of, you know, it's basically a Cthulhu monster with a bunch of masks that it wears.
Yeah, the only reason I brought it up is because it's the FTC that's filing mm-hmm. the case, and it's the federal agency versus this, right?
Yeah, so. But that's the whole, you know, in a that's what happens with a country that has a judiciary that judges these. Regardless, I think it's worth mentioning that there are a lot of possible consequences to this decision, many of which we don't even know. We just won't know until they happen. I will say that I've seen a lot of yay, Bobby Kotick is gone. I've seen a lot of boo, Bobby Kotick will be worth billions after this deal. Mm-hmm. Both, I believe you can hold both in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's good that he will be gone, and I think it is terrible that he will be a multi-billionaire. I think he's probably one now anyway, but even if he is not, he will be, because that's how much this deal is worth. If he gets like a pittance of it, he will be worth billions of dollars. There's a lot of good things about Microsoft owning Blizzard, and there's a lot of potentially bad things about Microsoft owning Blizzard, and some of them we just won't know. One thing we do know, however, is that Diablo 4 is not coming to Game Pass, period, unless they change their minds like down the road. But right now, the president of Microsoft Gaming has said straight up, this is not happening. And Blizzard has said it too. Activision has said it. This is not happening. Diablo 4 is not going to Game Pass. And I mention this for people who have been waiting for it to, and I know you're out there. We've had conversations.
Mm-hmm.
This is official, guys. If you want to play Diablo 4, buy Diablo 4. You're not going to get to try it free. I would personally love to see it on Game Pass. I think Game Pass is great. It isn't happening. I'm going to do something a little unusual here and throw it to you guys to talk about what your big takeaways are from this. I'm going to go to Joe first.
As far as like what I think the big takeaway of this decision is, or
of this decision of the merger going forward, anything that when you're looking at this story that you're like, oh, this thing.
There's not a lot of big standouts as far as like, oh, here's a gotcha, or here's like one big thing. I think it's interesting that it's going to move forward. I actually think that's a good thing, potentially ultimately. And I'm excited and nervous to see what comes next, mainly because part of that deal is, like we talked about, that removal of the Bobby Kotick would like make the transition and then leave. And I think that will give Blizzard the best chance at recovery. The interesting thing to me is now it starts, we get this, now that this is moving forward, we get to have other conversations. What does this look like for the individual holdings of Activision? Are they going to be split up into separate entities again to focus on their individual things? Microsoft is known for doing that with acquisitions, where they will split things up because now it's all still part of the same network. It doesn't have to be part of its one company anymore. It's under a larger umbrella, right? So, like, you have Bethesda doing Bethesda things, but Bethesda can be leveraged to use its tools or its properties for other things under the Microsoft umbrella if they so choose. And there's no reason necessarily for Activision and Blizzard to remain a single entity anymore after this acquisition is finalized. And I know this is the hopeful thinking, and everybody's talked about this, that it could see Blizzard spun off to its own thing again, but it is actually a real possibility. And now that conversation can start to actually happen potentially, and we can start to look to see if there are signs of that. There's no, because it's not in question whether or not the acquisition is going to be approved. It is. So I'm excited to see what that means for that and the individual pieces of it, because Activision Blizzard King, or yeah, ABK, is a large, large entity with lots of moving pieces that were somewhat needed for each other at one point, and now with this, not necessarily. So we'll see how that works out.
Okay, Liz?
I am just concerned, not necessarily for Blizzard specifically in this case, but I think about the gaming industry at large. And obviously, yes, this lawsuit has just said it's not going to be a monopoly. The acquisition can go through. I am concerned because over the past decade, we have seen more and more developers be consolidated into fewer and fewer entities. And now kind of our big game devs are Microsoft, Sony, and EA. And it's like, I'm just concerned that we have so many developers under these single umbrellas and there are fewer and fewer of them. And what does that mean for games? I don't think long-term that's a good thing for games to consolidate all the power into a small number of big corporations. But at the same time, it almost seems like that's just a reality. That's a reality we have to face as games get bigger and games have bigger budgets. You get these huge blockbuster games with 100 hours, 200 hours of gameplay with big name voice actors. You need a lot of money. You need a lot of support. You need that kind of corporate support. But it it concerns me that maybe in the long term, and this is something we aren't going to see tomorrow. This isn't something we're going to see the day the acquisition clears. This is something we're going to see 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road. How does this impact the gaming industry at large to consolidate more power into fewer game publishers? And I think that I'm really frightened that this could mean we're getting fewer games. We're getting fewer games. We're getting corporately approved games that aren't experimental or different, because big corporations really love to do things that are a proven success and that they know they can get their money. They know they can get their money back on.
And they absolutely hate gambling on something that they have no idea if it's going to work or not. Yeah,
they hate doing things that are new or different. So this worries me a lot. I'm very worried for the future of gaming, but at the same time, I think this is an inevitability because of the cost of making these things. So I have mixed feelings. I hope things work out really well, but I'm worried, guys. I'm real worried.
And you have good reason to be, because if the growth of EA shows us anything, it's that when a company absorbs smaller game companies, maybe they don't change them right away, but the same, like, it can very easily turn into a situation where a place like EA buys, say, I can't remember the company that made Ultima. Electronic Arts buys the company that made Ultima and runs Ultima into the ground. And then they buy BioWare and they push BioWare into making games they don't particularly know how to make that fit a model that the EA wants them to make. And they do this with lots of companies.
And it's Mythic Entertainment, by the way.
Mythic, thank you. There's lots of this in the industry already. We've seen it. So it is concerning. And I feel like what we've got to do at some point is come around to the idea that you don't need to have a monopoly if every competitor in the industry kind of has an agreement on who gets what.
Oh, yeah. That's collusion and fixing has been a thing forever.
And that's something that's real bad in gaming. To a certain degree, the saving grace of Sony being one of the powers is that Sony hates playing with anybody else. But the downside of that is they then started a lot of this acquisition hunger by just buying everybody, so they didn't have to play with anybody else. And I'm not a big fan of Phil Spector or Microsoft or any corporation, but I will give it to Spector that when he said, hey, we don't want exclusivity, we want our games everywhere, it's Sony that started all this exclusivity stuff, he's not wrong. But that doesn't change the fact that by buying Activision Blizzard, Microsoft has just like quintupled its footprint in the gaming sphere. And it was already a big footprint. So yeah, there's pros and cons to this. Like I said before, you can be really happy Bobby Kotick's gone and be really, really sad that Bobby Kotick will be a multi-billionaire who will probably pop up again and victimize more workers in some other industry.
I think he's going to be on his super yacht. Dude's currently worth $600 million.
I think that he is not the kind of person that will retire, because for him, I don't think the money is as important as the power he feels when he gets to denigrate people.
Yeah, maybe you're right.
And that's the case for a lot of them. So, but I think at this point, we've probably talked about this enough, and I guess go ahead.
Can we go out with just some kind of happy note? Can we make up some kind of happy note to come out of this podcast with?
I don't think we have to make one up, because I will say this. I have been really heartened by seeing the community response to games like Dragonflight and Diablo 4, and even Immortal with this recent news announcement. For all the flaws Immortal might have, I like to see communities in gaming, and there are more communities in gaming than before. People are finding them and making them. A lot of games have them. Games, like, for all that I don't play it and would never really play it, I've had some really good conversations with Fortnite players recently.
Yeah.
Because I've been talking to a lot of people much younger than me. And that's what happens as you age. People are just younger than you all the time. But yeah, like there's communities are happening in gaming. One of the things I used to love about BlizzCon was how they talked about the Blizzard community. One of the things I like about what I'm seeing now is that there's a lot more of the gaming is for everybody. Let's not be gatekeepers. Let's not be, you know, the kind of people who like decide, oh, a woman protagonist, I'm, you know, throwing my table over and making angry posts. That I feel like the tide is changing. Things are going in a new direction, and it's a good direction. It doesn't mean it will stay that way. I am certainly worried about stuff for like the people who work in the industry and so forth, but I am hopeful about where this might go. not the corporate aspects of it, but the personal aspects of it. So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of optimism among people who are out there making communities, and I think it's a really good thing to see. If you guys have anything you want to say before we head on out,
the heart and soul of gaming has always been community.
Yeah, it's gamers.
And that's really interesting, because that's, you know, corporations, they want the gamers, they want the engagement, but at the same time, they kind of, you know, there's some pushback on communities that get too, I want to say too uppity, really, but it's, gaming communities can be so interesting because they can be so heartening, they can be so good, and sometimes they also become negative pits of toxicity. I yep. want to mm-hmm. see more of these positive gaming communities. I mean, when I wake up in the morning, you know, I get up and I check Discord and I see what my guild is up to. That's a huge part of my life. Just these people that I play Warcraft with that live halfway across the country. And it's not about playing Warcraft. I mean, we play Warcraft, but it's about making friends and caring about these people and, you know, getting together twice a week to play video games.
I forget who said this, but it was back in the WoW Insider days. I think it might have been you or Dan. It might have been Alex. But someone said the thing they are really selling you is the meeting hall.
Hmm.
And it's your meeting hall. And it's what you do in that meeting hall that makes it worth doing or not doing. They can put in all the content they want, but if you don't have people to play it with, if you don't have people to experience it with, it's less valuable. And I think that is true of a lot of these
games. Yeah, if games can build positive communities or build spaces where it's possible to create positive communities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Or they can build crap where you're getting, you know, continuously spammed with emotes while you're just trying to play Hearthstone and you get really mad and stop playing it. That can happen too.
Yeah.
But at least that's us. Yeah, at least that's us. It's about
the people.
So now, speaking of us, Joe?
Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means that this podcast, site, and community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, better chance at having your question answered on our podcast for the queue, and an ads-free site experience.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you to both Joe and Liz for being here and helping me actually make this a show and not just me rambling on for a while. Especially thanks to Liz, because honestly, I think that you're asking us to come out on a high note was really the right move there, and I'm glad that you did it. Also, thank you to Corey, Gavlin, KTS Stories, and Setsemi for answering my desperate call for questions, which we then didn't really talk about, and I'm sorry about that.
Every time you say that, I just want to scream, "The beacons are lit, Gondor calls for aid," like every time.
And it that is how it felt. You guys came through. I had a really rough day today was really awful, so I thank you very much for coming when I asked and giving me the questions I asked for, even if we didn't get to them, because there was a lot to talk about today. We're like 10 minutes over time here.
Turns out patch days are important.
Yeah, and we could have talked more about that patch too, guys. There's a lot going on there.
Oh, I'll be talking about a lot about that mega dungeon. Trust me.
Yeah, and I'm sure that this Sunday we will probably be talking about the story stuff.
100%.
Because it's a lot. But I want to thank you guys again. This has been the Blizzard Watch podcast. Thank you for being here with us, and we'll be back next week.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.